Thank you, Lou. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every once in a while, I actually show up there. I used to go there all the time, but it hasn't worked out that way for me. But it's a great group, and it's my home group, been my home group for many, many years, and it's good to have a home group. So I want to talk a little bit about the fifth step, just a little bit about that, and I hate to be torn away from my third step. You know, somehow I'm always looking to get back to that deal, so, you know, you may see me drift in that direction again, you know, back to 3rd and 11. I'm always doing 3 and 11, but they're all sort of tied up together. I had this deal in my mind. I don't really, as you can probably imagine, I don't really prepare a whole lot for this stuff, but I mean, in my own way, I suppose I prepare. I sort of think about it, but I like to have a theme because, you know, these steps are real interesting to me. It's sort of like looking through one of them. What do they call them? Kaleidoscopes. You know, how you use, is that what they call them? Kaleidoscopes. You turn them and, you know, you're looking at the, like the fifth step this way, and then you turn it a little bit and then you get all sorts of different colors. And then you turn a little bit and all sorts of different colors. And so, when I was, 2 or 3 years sober, I looked at it a certain way and I saw something. And then when I was around 5 years sober, I saw something else. And around 10 or 12 years sober, I saw something else. And about 15 years sober, I saw something. About 20 years sober, I saw something else. It's like you move a little bit to the left and you see something. You move a little bit to the right, you see something. You know, all sorts of different. It's like a prism, you know, all sorts of colors and things bursting into. And it's all sort of like one and really. And they're all sort of linked up and attached to each other in some mysterious way. And they all somehow have something to do with the oneness between me and my creator, you know, that creator, that guy, that him, you know, that thing they talk about that, oh, there I go into that third step thing again, but you know, you'll have to forgive me. You know what I mean? The big book just mentions it so much. I can't get away from it. It all has something to do with that him thing, you know, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events. You know, anybody in here besides me that would like to have great events happen to him? I mean, you don't want to be hanging around here for 25 years like me and have like, little horseshit happened to you. You know, you want to have like great crap. You know what I mean? Well, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to happen to you. What was it? Great events will come to happen for you and countless others, right? Come to pass for you and countless others. So if you, I guess you want to know who, if it has to do with your relationship with him, I guess you probably want to know who he is. You know, I'd want to know who he is, you know. It says in the, it says, because, you know something? I just figured it out. We are going to get to talk about him. Here's the deal, because you see, it says right here, it says it says, still you may say, but I have not had the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. There he is again. You know, he's showing up again. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. It's he. It's him. They're talking about him again. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Right? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. There he is again. You're supposed to ask him. If you don't know who he is, who are you going to ask? The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you. I mean, he is like all over this deal. This is like white on rice. This is like, you know, how can you come to an AA meeting? I mean, I think if you come to an AA meeting and they ain't talking about him, I think you gotta really ask for your money back. You gotta say, I came here for an AA meeting. I didn't come here for group therapy. I want to hear about that I want to hear about that message that has great weight and depth, that keeps people sober. Not for you see, you don't want to know about 90 and 90. You want to puke on 90 and 90. You better spit on 90 and 90. You know something? 90 and 90 is horse shit. That's just my opinion. You better get your mind straight. You want to know about 9,000 and 360. 9,000 meetings, 360 months. 9,000 meetings, 30 years. You know, everybody, 0.5% of the people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous, 1 in 200 make 25 years. So you can be one of the 199 that stay sober for 90 days, 30 times over a period of 10 years. You know, one of these people that say, well, I've been around the fellowship or in the fellowship, but I, you know, you could be one of those deals. You could be constantly starting over again. This time I'm going to do it right. You can be one of these guys that make 5 years. And you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, I'll tell you this. I know this sounds a little bit harsh. If you stay off and on sober for 30 years, 5 years here, and I know guys who have done it, 10 years drink, 2 years out, 3 years in, 1 year out, 6 years in, 1 year, 3 years, you know, that kind of deal, that kind of spotty thing. But, you know, for 3 years, I'm going to tell you this. This is the deal. That's still a hell of a lot better than drinking all the time. You know, the guys I know that have that kind of deal going on, it's a sad thing, and I love them and everything like that. You want to know, some of the families are still better off that they had some sobriety. So I'm totally putting that down. But really, you want better than that, don't you? That's not what you want. So, you know, the bottom line is that's why the good orderly direction thing and all that. So let's get to the real, let's get to the real chemotherapy in here. Let's talk about the real medicine in here. You know, the stuff that's going to keep you sober and relatively happy. And you walk with him for 25 years, you know, because, you know, I got to tell you something. I don't want anybody to ever think, well, because I'm talking up here and doing this stuff, that I do any of this stuff perfectly. Let me tell you something. I'm lucky. On my best day, maybe I do this 60%. I mean, probably my best day in my entire life, I'm like a 60% guy. Half the time, I'm doing it 30%. You'd be surprised where, if I did this thing like 90 or 100%, who knows where the heck I'd be, you know, because I am such, listen, I'm just like the guys in the book. I'm just like you. You know what it says? We are not saints, right? No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfectly. I've never been able to do anything like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like total, I'm a yes butter and if only or you don't understand her. You know what I mean? I am an alcoholic. I was born an alcoholic. I'll be an alcoholic until the day they lower me into the grave. You know, even if I stay sober, my tendency is always not to do this stuff. I have to understand, no matter how many times I do meetings, no matter how much time I do this stuff, I am like hair triggered, pointed in the wrong direction. I'm always looking to escape from Alcatraz. I'm always looking. My eyes are always looking at how can I do it the way that feels comfortable to me. You know what the way that feels comfortable to me is the way that got me in trouble in the first place. So left to my own devices, if I'm not on top of this thing, I'm always going to tend to drift away. One of the reasons why it's good to sponsor people and do a lot of working with others and a lot of step meetings like this, I'm very fortunate that I get to do stuff like this, is it sort of forces me. This sort of forces me to sort of lift weights. It forces me to exercise my brain. It forces me to sort of think about this stuff and get into this stuff. Very hard to screw up and drink and do all sorts of crazy stuff and go off to, you know, when you got to speak of the 12 and 12 group, you know what I mean? Every Friday or something like that. So it's a good thing. This kind of stuff sort of hones me and keeps me centered, because I'd be just, who knows where I'd be, you know. So one of the things I believe, which is obviously very important in this, and we'll talk a little bit more, in our deal we have here, is obviously the one thing that I think this thing is all about, and that is your relationship with God. I think that's what this is all about. That's what the book says. I mean, I know I'm very clear on that whenever I talk about it, and I want to always be clear whenever I'm talking about it, that, you know, I don't want people, and of course I know this is my opinion, and the big book, you know, in the big book they knew that people hated God. They write this book. They weren't a big organization. They're putting in their hearts and their souls of what they thought was the truth. And they knew, because they say it in the chapter of the agnostic, we know that people hate the idea of God. We know that the bristles stand up on their neck when we even mention God. We know that even when we see a new man, all of a sudden he rises with hope and he sees that someone's going to help him. As soon as we mention God, he goes down the tubes. They knew that. They put it in chapter to the agnostic. They could have watered this thing down. They could have always used the word higher power. They could have kept higher power throughout the whole thing. You ever think why they didn't do that? Why get into the controversy? Why get into the hassle? Why all of a sudden add stuff like God? But somehow, because, you know why? You guys like good orderly direction. Like, I know there's some people that are good orderly. So here's why. Because they wanted to leave the dance with the gal they brought there with. You know, the one they came there with. When you show up at the dance, when you bring a gal to the dance, you need to leave the dance with the same gal. You understand that? You wouldn't understand what that means, Andre. You know what that means? That means when God brings you to the banquet, you leave with God. You don't come with God to the banquet and then leave with somebody else because it's popular and people won't laugh at you. You understand? You have respect for the person that brought you to the banquet. And they knew. These guys knew who brought them to. They knew why they were sober. They knew it had nothing to do with them. They were very strong in that belief. And that's why they stayed sober for 10, 20, 30 years. There was no, they wanted to be clear. They said later on, clear cut directions. They didn't want to be hazy about this. They didn't want to give you the watered down chemotherapy. That's why they said things in the book like, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. A living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. That's why they said in the big book, if a mere philosophy, man, I'd love it to be a philosophy, just a rule book. I'll just do good orderly direction. Sounds good. Mom and apple pie. If a mere philosophy of life, you know, just doing things nice or being a nice person worked for us, we would have been sober long ago, but the needed power wasn't there. We had to find a power that would allow me to do that. You know, I can do the good orderly direction thing for about 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. I can do the A thing. I can follow the rules for, you know, a year or two or three. How do you, maybe even 90 and 90. But 9,000 and 360, 360 months and 9,000 meetings? I don't know. I don't know. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you something else. Not only can't I do it for 9,360, during the period I've been sober 25 years, I've screwed up more times than I can possibly imagine. I've messed this program up and people up and done the wrong things every possible way you can. And I'm still sober and I'm relatively happy. And you know why? Because my sobriety and how I feel about myself doesn't necessarily depend on being perfect. Thank God, because I didn't join a fellowship called Well People's Anonymous. You know, I've never been able to quite hit perfect in this thing. I've always been sort of like a screw up. I screwed up before I came here tonight. I'll probably screw up again tonight. As a matter of fact, even if I could do it perfectly, I just for practice, I make it a point to screw up at least once every day. You know? This program is perfect for a screw up like me because the God of my understanding, the one I have a relationship with, loves me even if I screw up. And that's what we're going to talk about a little today because that's a little bit about what the fifth step is about. You know, so it's all about this relationship. All these steps help us get into this relationship, and that's where I'm going to get the power. He's going to do for us what we can't. You're not going to do anything. You ain't going to do nothing. You go ahead and go ahead. This is what you need to do. You need to try to do this thing. You need to go out there and try to do this thing. Then you can be like one of these guys that has 10 years or 15 years who I sponsor. He says, I don't understand it. I've been trying to do this thing. It's not working. You know, you need to try to do this thing because you ain't going to do nothing. You know, you had your shot at this deal. You were the captain, and it didn't work out so good. So it says in our book, at least in our philosophy, it says he is going to do for us what we could not do for ourselves. He's going to work that miraculous change. You know, the great fact is just this, that our Creator lives in our hearts and minds. That's what they call them, the Creator, the Father of Light, and things of that nature. But, you know, when I think about, so whenever I think about the steps, at least for many years now, I always think about this program in terms of what the number one thing is. I never want to get lost. I don't worship the steps. I like to say things that bug people, you know? So when you're driving home tonight and you're pissed at me or you hate me or you say, who does that guy think he is, just please write me a letter and tell me that because, you know, because it'll just make me feel good. It'll sort of help me out. Make me feel good. Because, you know, once I got you thinking about me, then I really got you. Then you're a dead chicken, you know. No sense getting all pissed off about something I said. I'm going to probably change my mind on the way home. But I told somebody yesterday. I was in the car. You know, I like to say shit that makes people think, because alcoholics basically sleepwalk their way through lives. You know, really, we really sleepwalk. You know, we get married. We're married 10 years, and they say, "How the hell did I get here?" You know what I mean? How did I get with this broad? You know what I mean? We're in jobs. You know, we're in jobs for 10 years, and say, "Why do I'm in this stupid job?" You know, and you know, you applied for it. You know, we make major decisions in our lives like with our eyes closed, like sleepwalking. You know, we operate, our whole life is operated on urges and emotions and compulsions and needs to and have to and I feel like and, you know, and all this sort of stuff that has nothing to do with any thought process whatsoever, except, you know, I need something to make myself feel better. And sometimes you put a little thought into it and it makes sense and everything like that. But most of the time, it's just a matter of satisfying needs that we don't even know we have. Or don't even want to admit to, and you know, and somewhere all around there is sex, you know, and that's in there too. And it's all in there, and feeling, and it's all sorts of stuff. And that's our life. We run our lives, and we're like shipwrecked all day. We don't even understand half the time where how we get to. So I like to say things to sort of like wake people up. So I, you know, just to think about, because I was talking the other day at the car room about at the car room, and I said, well, you know, and actually I believe this. I figured I'd say that even if I don't believe it, because, and that is, how many people in here are in AA? Is this an open meeting or a closed meeting? Okay, so presumably, I'm not going to ask you, you're all in AA, right? Well, listen, here's the deal. AA doesn't work. You know that, don't you? You know, you're laughing, you think it's funny. AA doesn't work. You're involved, this doesn't work. AA doesn't work. I just told you something, it happens to be true. 0.5% of people stay sober 25 years. 1 out of 200 people who come to AA stay sober. AA does not work. If only 1 in 200 people come to AA stay sober, well, now I want to say this. Here's the good news. It works better than anything else in town. You understand? There ain't nothing else that works better than AA. You understand? But the truth of the matter is AA really doesn't work. It doesn't. If AA worked, then everybody who walked into AA would stay sober. This place would be packed. There'd be thousands of people. You couldn't have an AA meeting. You'd have thousands of people with 50 years, 40 years, 30 years. You wouldn't go to the call room tonight and see what year one, 10 people, year two, 3 people, year 3, 5 people, year 4, nobody, year 5, 1 person, 6, no people, 7, no people, 8, no people, 9, no people, then all the way up to 10, then 3 people. And then you wouldn't have that crap going on. Maybe it's around for 60 years. You'd have thousands of more people. AA doesn't work. It really doesn't. Works crappy. You know, it works better than anything else in town, but it works, you know, it works kind of crappy. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. AA really won't keep you sober. You know, you try AA, it really won't. You'll see. But it will actually lead you. It'll lead you to the thing that will keep you sober. It'll lead you to the thing that will keep you sober. If you read this book, it hints at that thing. There's some hints in there. You guys like, you know, like scavenger hunts? At times they sort of point to that thing that's going to keep you sober, but AA won't keep you sober. And there's a lot of people that come into AA, and they read this book, and you want something? You may sort of laugh. You guys may be out there and saying, oh, I know what he's talking about. I know what he's talking about. It's all over the book. It's that thing he was talking. You may think that's sort of like funny, but listen, there's a lot of people that come in here to AA and they read this book. They read it a lot. You know something? And even though they read it a lot, they don't find that thing. As a matter of fact, 199 out of 200 don't find that deal. And they don't stay sober. They don't find that deal that's going to give them permanent sobriety and peace of mind. So, you know, we can all make believe that this is just a wonderful deal and everybody comes in here is going to stay sober for 25 years and have a wonderful life. But I'm going to tell you the truth. The truth is, out of 200 people, one's going to make it for 25 years. They're going to find something. And you know what's kind of crazy? I've met guys with 23 years that are miserable as a son of a bitch. Not all of them are going to find that. Some are going to just stay sober with white knuckle stuff. You know? So, you know, it may lead you to the thing that's going to really actually do it for you. So, so I always like to concentrate on the one. I want to major on the majors. I don't want to get stuck in the minors, you know? I mean, you know, you start talking to an alcoholic. Whenever I'm talking to an alcoholic, the first 5 minutes I say, what's the problem? The first 5 minutes is total horseshit. It's total he, she, it, them, blah, 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 blah. I always ask the first question. The first question, not always, but some guy starts talking blah, blah, blah. And I says, does this have anything to do with money? No, 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 blah, 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 blah. 10 minutes later, I said, so it's money. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, it's all horse shit. You know, I went to law school, and I am like, law school teaches you to look for issues. I'm like, I like to focus on issues. And AA is a one-issue deal. It's a one-solution deal. There is one who will solve your power. That one is God. If you have a problem with it, get over it. Like Dr. Bob said, he said, if you have something that bothers you about that, he says, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. The great fact, it's very clear what AA is about. Okay? It's about him, finding him, acknowledging him, realizing, you know, that's what Chapter of the Agnostics is all about. That's why they wrote this chapter. It's chapter to the non-believers. They wrote a chapter to the non-believers. You know what they say in the chapter? They say, you need to get over it. He said, you need to get over it. It says this sort of thinking needs to be abandoned. You know, we've been prejudiced towards religion. They've got their right idea. You know, I'm not even going to go into the thing they say about fear. You know, that little thing. Well, I will go into it. You know, because I'm only going to tell it so you guys can help somebody, because I know you guys have never had fear. We never apologize to anyone. I want you to listen to some of this language. These were not people that were saying, like, excuse me, I don't want to bother you, but do you mind if I tell you? These were, like, in-your-face people. This book is, like, in-your-face. This book is not equivocal. You know, this book is not, like, do-it-your-own-way kind of thing. This book, it says, we never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. I told you about that kid who walked out of an AA room and came up to me, you know, and I didn't think badly of it. I thought it was laughing. He says, you know, oh, you're Russell. He says, you know, I hear you're really a nice guy. I want to hear you because I hear you're a nice guy. And he says, but they say you talk too much about God. You know, listen, I don't ever want a kid walking out of a meeting that I was chairing thinking I talk too much about God and that that's a bad thing in an AA meeting. Because if there's a kid in AA who thinks that we talk too much about God, he's really going to the wrong meetings. He's really not getting AA. He's getting that watered down shit. You know, so I mean, you know, you don't have to like what I say, but you can dislike what I say. As a matter of fact, in the book it says you can dislike what I say, but I try not to say anything that isn't part of my personal experience or something I don't read in the big book. So most people that don't like what I say, what I'm saying is, well, what you really don't like is you don't like what they wrote. You just don't like this thing. So you don't want me to keep on pointing. You don't want me to keep on pointing to this thing. You want to talk about this thing. You want to say, rarely have we seen a person who failed who has never thoroughly followed our past. You want to talk about thoroughly following their past. You want to say, I want to thoroughly follow. You want to say, I'm really going to do this thing. You just don't want me to talk about it a lot. You just prefer to sort of like do with, you know, the alky thing. Bullshit. Bullshit. Just sort of, you know, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said and done. Just talk about it. But not really do it, which has a lot to do with the fifth step. We're going to go into that. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. When that guy said, you talk too much about God, I said, well, I'm sorry for that. Oh, I apologize if that hurt your feelings. I'm sorry. I talk a lot about God. I'll have to cut that out. I'll just have to stop that because it may offend some of the sickest people in the audience. I think I'll just sort of cater to the sickest members of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because we only got 1 in 200 are going to make it anyway. So instead of worrying about feeding them what they so sorely want, why don't I concentrate on the guys who ain't never going to make it anyway? But of course, that's all strange because it ends up sometimes the sickest people are the ones that make it. So you can never figure it out, you know. It's all a mystery. You know, the point is, whenever I think about the steps or talk about the steps, I'm always thinking about it in terms of, what does this have to do with a relationship with him? What does this have to do with him? because it just gives me it's just a different way of thinking of it. You can think about it any way you want. You can think of the fifth step. You see, you don't have to think about him. You can think about the fifth step as some sort of psychiatric thing, or you know, some sort of deal. But since I know he's all over this, his fingerprints are all over this deal, I'm thinking about, well, how is this? What does this have to do with him? Because I'd rather think about him than think about me, because you know I'm so screwed up. You know, let's just think about him and what does this mean as far as he's concerned? And I talk about the fifth step, and I want to talk about freedom, and there's certain things that I focus on. And the problem with the fifth step is usually when I come to a meeting, I'm focusing on like one. A theme, but I got to tell you something. With the fifth step, there's like about four or five themes that sort of run into each other, and they're themes that have to do with loneliness. They're themes that have to do with separation. They're themes that have to do with love, and they're themes that have to do with forgiveness. And there's a bunch of themes that sort of run together that I have to talk about, and they forgiveness is a real big part of it, and belonging, and feeling clean, and being loved is a whole bunch it has to do with it. You know, I think like the worst feeling that you could possibly have as an alcoholic has got to be loneliness, feeling totally out there. Totally alone, looking good, smelling good, and everything, but just feeling so dying so much to make some sort of connection with anything that moves. I think alcoholics just crave fellowship, crave, you know, like succubus, just crave hanging on to something, you know. And that was what it was all about for me. That's what the alcohol was, to try to be able to fit in or sort of make some sort of connection with somebody, and trying to get, of course, I couldn't hang out with people that were, you know, quote, decent people, because, you know, you hang out with decent people, it made me feel crappy. So I would have to hang out with people that I could feel superior to, or, you know, they say we try to keep lower companionship. I was the lower companion. But you know, and a lot of it has to do with with who you believe you are. I mean, deep down, not who you show the world you are, not who you dress up for, or not what you outline, not what you portray yourself to be to the world. That's what the fifth step talks about, being, you know, like a double-minded person, like we have one we show to the world. I'm not talking about the person you tell everybody else you are. I'm talking about the people I'm telling who you think you are. Deep down inside. You know, the crazy thing is half of us don't even know who we are or think we know who we are deep down inside. I'm sort of talking about the voices too. You know them voices, you know. You know the voices, you're in the shower, you're lathering up, and you're doing your hair, whatever it is, girl, you know, and everything, and all of a sudden you hear that deal. You're an asshole, you're a piece of shit, you don't deserve to live, you should die, you know. That can, sure, because you don't know what it's like. You're laughing, you think it's funny. But you're driving along in a car, you know, and somebody says to you, you're a piece of shit, you're never going to be okay, you don't deserve anything, you're going to, you know, you're a loser, you know, constantly comparing your insides with other people's outsides and constantly thinking how, you know, how they're doing much better, you know, all that sort of bullshit. We always come up short, and, you know, so that's because that's what you really think about yourself. That's your reputation with you. That's where that's coming from. That's what you really think. That's what's really going on. You can tell yourself all sorts of horse shit, you know. But if you really want to know what you think about yourself, you're just going to have to just listen to the voices. Because you can look around in that car and look around in the shower that I can. There ain't nobody there but you. So that's you telling you who you are, who you think you are. So you really want to get rid of those voices, because you want to know why? You want to know why you're going to get rid of the voices? Because listen, they ain't helping you. You're going to have to trust me on this. When you got that voice going on, a lot of you guys think, you know, when that voice comes in, you're an asshole, you're a piece of shit, you're a jerk, you're stupid, why'd you do that, all that sort of stuff. You know, you think that when you don't hear those voices, like they've gone away and they're not around anymore, like they've gone to Brazil. But listen, they're hanging out in only one body, you know, they haven't gone to Florida, you know what I mean? They're like here, they're still there. They're still working their way in, you know, most, you know, listen, you guys talk about the committee. I love people that talk about, well, the committee was going, you guys don't even know what the committee, you know, the committee, listen, the committee that you hear in your brain arguing over the 50,000 voices all talking about you in bad ways, you know what I mean, that committee, You know, that deal, that's not even the committee you got a problem with. The committee you got a problem with are meeting in secret and you're not invited. Trust me, they're meeting right now in secret. They're meeting right now in secret. And you know what they're planning? They're planning your demise. Because you ain't worth being alive on the planet Earth. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book, Man Against Himself, you know, and they had a chapter on alcoholics, and it says alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. You got a committee that's sitting down inside trying to figure out why you should not be alive, why you should never have a relationship, why you'll never be good enough and everything, why you're a piece of shit. And every once in a while, they form a plan. The committee forms a plan. They get together like the United Nations, and they actually come to an agreement. And then you know what happens? Your committee starts in here, and you hear the committee, and you think that's the committee. That's not the committee. That's just their, like, soldiers, you know what I mean? Going out to do work. So, yeah, and you want to get rid of that sucker, because here's the deal. Here's the deal. Here's my theory. This is just a theory. I can't prove it. I think if you operate, I think you operate better without the committee. I think if you can get that committee out of there, get it going away, I think you probably treat people decently, more decently. You probably, you know, without the committee, I'll bet you could do that good orderly direction without even trying to do good orderly direction. I'll bet people that operate without the committee, I think God can remove that. You know why I think God can remove that? Because in the book, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says right here, talking about what happens when we sincerely took that position and we turn our will and our life over to the care of God. It says right here, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Remarkable things. That's like great things, great events and everything. We had a new employer, capital E, God, being all powerful. So I don't know what God you're going to choose, but I chose the all powerful one, because it never made any sense to me to choose like the guy with the limited power. You know what I mean? He provided what we needed if we kept close to him. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So I guess you got to keep close to him and perform his work well, not keep close to like somebody else and not perform as well. I think you got to get close to him, but then you're going to have to figure out who he is again. That's like, see how complicated this is? You know, how can you keep close to him if you don't know who he is? And how can you do his work well when you don't know who he is? You don't even know what his work is. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. We became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. So I know that God has the power of lifting these voices away, of getting rid of this crap. So the Big Book says, here's what it says. It says, here's the three things that you have to be absolutely convinced of. I know you guys are absolutely convinced of it. Not, here's the deal, that we were alcoholic and could not, and I'm the same way, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, right? You're absolutely convinced of that, right? That no human power could, relieve their alcoholism, but God could and would if he were sought, right? That's the deal. Okay, you see, you know, that's the easy stuff. That's the easy, and that's the thing. As long as we're absolutely convinced, and here's the deal. Here's the real problem here. The real problem is here, I'm stuck on one. I'll be stuck on one until the day I die. That we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives, because I mouth that, I say that, I know what it means. At times I actually believe it, and then 90% of my life, I live my life trying to manage my own life. There's a whole huge part of me that every chance I get wants to figure out how to manage my life. I want to manage my life. You know, the truth is, I really don't want to believe that. What I really want to believe is what Dr. Young, but Roland Hazard said. Now knowing the inner workings of my mind and really knowing how to do this and really being smart and really going to a lot of AA meetings and really reading the Big Book, now knowing the inner, that drinking is impossible. That yelling and screaming is impossible, but being depressed is impossible, by screwing up is impossible. I can always do good orderly direction. What I really want to think is I'll talk about God and I'll say God and I'll talk to you about God and I'll do all this stuff about God. But what I really want to do is that now that I'm so wonderful and I know all this stuff, I can handle it. I can handle it. I can handle my life. I can do good orderly direction. I can do well, that I'm the one who has the power. Every part of me wants to really that I'm the one who has the power. And this is really like on a good day. I mean, I really have that battle going on in me, whether I want to believe it or not, that I want to be the one to run it. You know, and every once in a while, well, listen, no, God can be my co-pilot. No, God is my co-pilot. You ever see that? God is my, yeah, absolutely. He's like the co-pilot. You get it? Because he may be all powerful, but because he's all powerful, I'm going to allow him to help me fly the plane. He's like in the co-pilot's chair. You know what I mean? The co-pilot, you know, shut up. The pilot's driving here. You know, he can hang around. He can hang around long enough to bless, you know, God, please bless everything I want to do anyway. You know what I mean? God, if you're listening to me, thy will be done. Give me the money. If thy will be done, don't give me the money and don't give me the girl. You know what I mean? I just want God to hang around long enough to give me what I want anyway and to bless what I want to do anyway. You know, if it be thy will, let me win always. You know what I mean? I'm not playing for defeat. You know, I just want, you know, this God is my co-pilot. I'm piloting the plane. He's my co-pilot to make sure I get to where I want to go. You know? I want to go. That's the idea. So the truth of the matter is, I can't, you know what I can't stand? The truth. That I really do want to live in my fantasy world. So I say to my sponsor, I'm 18 months sober, and I'm walking along with my sponsor, and I said, this thing ain't working. And I said, what do you mean it ain't working? He says, it ain't working. He says, I'm doing everything. I don't know whether you guys have ever said this or heard anybody say this in AA. He says, I'm doing everything. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing everything. And it just ain't working for me. And so he says to me, he says, well, you know, Russ, this is Bob Sully. He says, well, you know, you're doing everything. It's not working. He says, everything. And it's not working for me. He says, well, you know, he says, maybe you're one of the rare ones. I said, the rare ones? He says, yeah, you might be one of the rare ones. I said, the rare ones? I'm starting, this sounds pretty good, because I knew. You know how you know that you, because I had been in those meetings, and I was so much sharper than all those turkeys. I knew there was something different about me. Rare, more chosen, you know? So he says, one of the rare ones? He says, yeah, the rare ones. He says, well, tell me about that. He says, well, they talk about them in all the meetings. I said, what do you mean? He says, they talk about it at all the meetings you went to. I says, well, I've been going to a lot of meetings. He says, yeah, every meeting they talk about it. He says, I've been to all of them. They talk about them at every meeting. He says, I've never heard them talk. He says, they talk at every meeting. He says, when they, he says, don't they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? He says, yeah. He says, well, you're obviously one of the rare ones. You've done everything. You just told me I've done everything in AA and it's not working for you, right? That's what you just said to me. He says, so you're obviously one of the rare ones. AA, it's not going to work for you. So you better find another fellowship. Because you've done everything and it's not working for you. And of course, I'm sitting there because you know what I hate? You know what I hate? The truth. I hate the truth, don't you? I have a sign in my office, you know? He says, the truth, you know, the Jack Nicholson line, you can't handle the truth. I mean, because the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, right? You know, so I mean, what I want to do is I want to talk and talk and whine and whine. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I joined that great fellowship. You know, 99% of the people are in that fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thumb-sucking crybabies, you know, and I joined the fellowship, and I want you to listen to me. You know, what do alcoholics say? When you talk to an alcoholic, you know what they say? They say, you got to listen to me. No, you got to listen to me, you know? And you ever try to tell an alcoholic, no, I don't, you know? You got to listen. I want to talk and talk and talk and talk, and here's the rules. When you're an alcoholic and you're talking, the rule is I get to talk as much as I want, repeat myself and everything. You've got to listen, and here's the rule. Never say anything to hurt my feelings, because that would be like taking my inventory. You know what I mean? And, you know, so this is going to be like the psychiatrist group therapy where we stay there for 20 years and nobody ever says, why don't you fucking grow up? Just don't say anything that's going to hurt my feelings, because it might hurt my feelings and then I might change, you know, and I don't really want to get out of this deal. I prefer to just talk and talk, and you can pat me on the back and tell me how wonderful I am. So he says, so I'm sitting there like this because he's saying, he's now telling me I got to leave AA because AA is not working. And He says, no, you don't have to leave AA. So he says, but why don't you, what about, you're doing everything? What about your fourth step? I said, oh, that. Oh, that, you know what I mean? That's the way it is, isn't it? You know, I go up to Father Al Grau, PhD, Jesuit priest, you know, I had 7 years of sobriety. I had some sort of thing, you know, I'm not going to go into it, but a thing that had been bothering me for 6 or 8 months. And so I had to go see him. I finally had to go see him. You know, I said, this is the guy. He's got a PhD. He runs the Palm Beach Institute. He's a Jesuit priest, ex-prisoner of war. You know, he's like, it's like talking to Jesus right there. This guy is going to touch me. He's going to heal me. This is the man. This is like talking to the Pope. I'm going to walk in there. I'm not even Catholic. I'm a Jewish kid from New York. What does it matter? I'm going in there. This is the deal. I walk in there and he says, I need to talk to you about this deal. I start telling him about it. He says, no, I'm not the guy. He says, no, you're the guy. Blah, 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 blah. He says, no, I'm not the guy. He says, no, you're the guy. Blah, 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 blah. He says, okay, I'll listen to you. So I go through my schleb, my deal, you know, and he looks at me and he says, I said, so what do you think? He says, you know what I think? I said, what? He says, I think you're full of shit. I'm sitting there. I'm not even Catholic. I know that's wrong. I know that's not. I just somehow, I'm not Catholic, and I know that priests aren't supposed to do that. Aren't they supposed to say like five Hail Marys? Maybe they do that to Jewish kids. I don't know. Five Hail Marys, maybe a Jewish kid can't say it now. He says, you're full of shit. I don't know. You're full of shit. And then he reams me for 5 minutes. You know, don't you hate when that happens? Don't you hate when that happens? That's the problem with the fist. That's the problem with the deal, isn't it? It's okay to talk in a bar. It's all okay to talk in an AA meeting. Say to anybody, but you don't really want to talk to anybody who's going to actually hurt you. You don't want to get vulnerable and somebody's going to slap you around or, you know, get real. You don't want to get in front of anybody that's going to really get real with you and get down to where the voices are and slap them around a little bit. You just want to sort of like go on with the pretense, you know. You know, you see, the truth is you still want to manage your life. You still want to control your life. And when you say your little AA shit at the meetings, Or you talk your little bullshit to the other people, or you say your crap, you know what I mean? You have complete control because they can't come at you where you live, can they? They can't really come at you, you know, with a cavalry and whip you around or anything like that, you know? They can't do anything to you. They can't hurt you. You can't really get hurt too badly in an AA meeting, you know, unless you have some crazy old-timer there who says something, cross-talks, and takes your inventory in front of the group, you know? I don't know who that could be. A is like a safe place, right? It's a safe place, you know? Out there is a safe place, you know? But when you're talking to a sponsor, when you put yourself, it's one thing to, you know, to say we cannot manage our own lives and God couldn't would it be which was sought, but the consequences of turning your will and your life over to God, you know, I'm going to say it straight out, and I believe this. I'm saying you can't turn your will and your life over to God if you can't turn yourself over to another human being. That's why sponsorship is so important. And I'm not saying I do this perfectly. I don't speak to my sponsors as much as I should. And even when I speak to them, I don't divulge everything I should. And I'm the same thing like everybody else. And we all do it sort of half-assed. But I don't know how you can turn your will and your life over to anybody or say you're not managing your life or you don't have your fingerprints all over your life or you ain't controlling your life if you haven't turned your life over to a human being. And I don't know whether any of you understand, somehow, some way, you've got to put yourself under somebody. You know, I mean, some of the greatest people in this world, I don't care whether it's Mother Teresa or the apostles or anything, if you talk to them for more than 5 minutes, they're going to be pointing to somebody else. You talk to me, I'm going to be talking to about Bob Sullivan, I'm going to be talking about Joe Snyder. They're going to be telling you about somebody else in their life, an older person, a mentor, who they put themselves under. They were apprentices, and they said, teach me, mold me, do with me whatever I can. I allow you to take my inventory. I allow you to beat me up. I allow you. You can do it. You know what I mean? It don't feel good. Let me tell you something. When Father Al told me I was full of shit, when Bob Sullivan told me, why don't you shut up, when people told me, you know, when I told this guy the other day, you know, and I said, why don't you grow up? Why don't you grow up? And then now he told me, he says, man, you know, the one thing I heard you say, why don't you grow up? I said, well, now it's your line. I said, but I want you to tell you, somebody told me that one day. When I get stuff like that from people, when people say that stuff, you know, something, I don't like it. I'm not talking about stuff that like makes me feel good, that is fun to hear. But you want to know something? I put myself in the position to hear it. And I'm not saying after I hear it, I don't walk away saying, well, that's sorry, son of a bitch, you know. I'm like an alcoholic. I think in my first 10 minutes is think, how can I assassinate him? Killing him and his wife and his dog, you know what I mean? But you know something? Somewhere down the line, I start, all of a sudden the thought comes across this, well, maybe he's right. And then the next thought comes, you know, he is right. And what happened with Father Al Grau is something that had been bothering me for 6 months left because I went to my little bunk there, and you know, with a little, I'm sitting there in my little bunk, the little wooden cross is hanging, and I'm going, that son of a, I can't believe it. You know, he said this and I said that, and I'm going through my mind and everything. Then all of a sudden, this thought came across, maybe he's right. And then the next thought was, he is right. And I thought about 5 seconds, and something that had been bothering me for 6 months was lifted, never to come back again. He knew exactly, God knew exactly who to put in my life. I had to put myself under this man's tutelage. I had to listen to him and allow myself to get molded. I had to put myself in the crucible, you know? Hey, it's easy. Why do we need another human being? Hey, I mean, it's easy to say, hey, God, just you and me and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you put yourself under, you know, you might have to have a little bit of foresight, and they talk about the book as to who to pick. But, you know, you put yourself, I'll tell you when you find out whether you're managing your life or whether you're turning your life over by what you do. See, all this stuff is great in theory. It's great to theoretically talk about the fifth step and the ninth step and the 12th step and good orderly direction, all this stuff. But I'll tell you where the rubber meets the road. The rubber meets the road when I say, who is your sponsor? Do you talk to him? Who are you following? Who's following you? Who do you sponsor? The rubber meets the road when you ask the tough yes and no questions. How many meetings you go to? What books are you reading? What are you doing with your life? When I find out what you're actually doing with your life, that tells me all about you. Not what you tell me about you. Not when you sit there and say, yeah, I'm really working these steps. I really want to do it right. I really want to do this and everything like that. Not that crap. Listen, if you got a sponsor in your life and you're not talking to your sponsor and you're not hanging out with your sponsor, or you're not hanging out with some sort of mentor, or you're not following somebody, let me tell you something. You don't have a sponsor. I'm just going to tell you the facts of life. If you're not following somebody, you are your own sponsor. You can tell me you got a sponsor in Wisconsin. You've had a sponsor for 20 years. You can tell me anything you want. If you're not following somebody or looking at somebody, you got squat. And you know why I say that? Because listen to this. Here you go. Because it's the truth. Because it's the absolute truth. Because how can you say you're sponsored by somebody when you're not following them? You're not with them all the time. You're not talking to them. You're not thinking about. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? You know who you're following? You. You're making the decisions. You're not bouncing them off anybody. You're running your own life. You're managing your own life. And you know what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says? That you're alcoholics and you can't manage your own lives. And you know what you're doing? You got 3 years. You got 5 years. You got 10 years. You got 15 years. And guess what you're doing? You're managing your own life. And you get in the buck and you say, what could possibly be going wrong? I'm going to AA meetings. I'm doing all that sort of stuff, you know, because you know why? Because you're not doing shit. It's just window dressing. You're just looking like, you're doing, it's like dressing up. It's like playing house. You're playing AA. You're playing it. You're not going farther. You know, and it's a tough thing to do. Because it requires humility. And God knows I'm not humble. I'm arrogant. I want to have control. You know, it requires a lot of humility to put yourself in the hands of somebody else when you're an alcoholic who really wants to say to the world, screw you. Why is he talking? I should be up there talking. You know what I mean? Why is he, you know, when you're somebody who doesn't want to follow anybody, it's a tough deal. It runs against my nature. And I've got to tell you something. I've got to fool the only way I can do it, and this is the truth, is I got to fool myself. I play tricks on myself in order to force me to do it. I go to a lot of what I do is I hang out with, you know, one of the things that I did, and they encourage it. I'm not saying you have to. They encourage it in the big book. It says we encourage church membership. You know, when I started seeing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had more sobriety than that, when I started going to AA meetings, let me tell you something. One of the greatest things in the world is being new in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know something? And one of the greatest and worst things in the world is not being new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I started going to meetings, I started realizing that I was the oldest guy in the group almost all the time, with the longest time almost all the time. You know what I'm, you know what? I see guys sometimes from NA coming over to AA because they want more. Nothing wrong with NA. You know, they just want more. They go with more. There's some people that want more. They say maybe over here. Guys are 25, 30 years, 40 years. You know what I mean? So I started going to church. I started going to a Bible study in church. I walked into the Bible study one day. There were 20 guys. They all had gray hair. They were like in their 90s. They had been studying the same stuff we're studying for 40 years. I sat myself next to one of these guys. I found alcoholics there and all sorts of people. My sponsor's 52 years sober. It's a Baptist preacher. You know, I have to put myself. I go to that Bible study every Thursday morning. I put myself in the presence of people who are farther along the road that I can learn from. Because if I don't, I hang out in here, which is not a bad place, but I start thinking I actually know what the hell I'm talking about. People come up to me and they say, oh, Rush, you really helped me. Are you really? And there's nothing wrong with that. You can say that, and I tell you, I think that's great. But you know something? After a while, I'll start believing my own press clippings. Like, I'm really okay, you know? And I'm one nutty son of a bitch, you know? And you know, so I've got to force myself. I got to go out there. And you see, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I need – AA is a launching pad. I used to think it was a coffin. Oh, well, that's not an AA thing. That's not an AA convention. That's not an AA thing. Let me see. This is the thing that allows me to live my life. And you don't have to have a chip. You know, I was with a guy today at lunch and a couple of AA guys and a guy today at lunch. And we were hanging out and talking and squawking. And one guy said to me, he says, well, he's a great guy. Is he an AA? He says, no. He says, he's not. I thought he was. He says, hey, you don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend. You know, he's a fellow deacon in the church of mine. He knows I'm an AA. And, you know, I have a ministry in my church, you know, that I run. That everybody in my church knows I'm an AA, you know. And the bottom line is because I want more. This is a launching pad. You take it out to the world. You don't hide out in here. This ain't a closet. You know, and because I need to put myself in a position where I constantly got people in front of me that I can admire, that has more, that I want more, that I could walk towards and ask their advice and be there. Because if I'm with them all the time and I'm talking and I'm going through stuff, by accident, one day I'll say something and they'll say, well, that's kind of a little screwed up. You know what I mean? They'll sort of check me on it. You know, in AA, that may not happen to me. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, that's just the honest to God truth. And they may not, but a bunch of guys come up to me in AA and say, let me talk to you about something. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you something. And you know, with some of the guys I hang out with, you know, we're in their 70s and 80s. You know what I mean? And they'll check me. They'll say some things to me really fast about some stuff I'm doing or not doing. I got to find. I got to seek out. I got to go. You know, I got to put myself in the position to have somebody take my inventory. None of this crap. You don't have any right to take my inventory. I need people to take my inventory. You know, the right people to take my inventory. That's one thing. And you know, what do I get from that thing? And I hate it, and it's horrible. And at the other end of that deal is forgiveness and not being separated. You know, because I'll tell you, every problem I have, real and imagined, you know, it says in the book, the problems we have, the hurts we have, real and imagined, fancy to real, have the power to actually kill. Every problem I have, real and imagined, gets magnified inside of me and takes me away from you and separates me from you and makes me feel like I'm a moral leper. You know, one of these days, maybe next week, I'll talk about what happened down at the football field, you know, when I was a kid, you know, where I felt separated and alone. And, you know, it makes me feel like I feel like those voices come back and I feel like I'm separated from you. I'm not a part of. And, you know, if I can have that relationship with another human being in my life who knows about me, knows about what's happening, even when he chastises me or rebukes me. You know, but he does it with love, and he says, you know, but I love you anyway. You know what I mean? And I'm there. It gives me that feeling of belonging and forgiveness. There's nothing like being forgiven, and there's nothing worse than like feeling shamed and unforgiven. You know, you can't look people in the eyes. You gotta look at their feet. You second guess yourself every time you talk. You can't be yourself. You gotta make believe you're somebody else. You know, you got to worry about what people think about you. You got to worry about what you say and what you do and how you act and how you feel and how you sound and all that crap. You know what I mean? You can't even be yourself. You can't even be free. You know, so, I mean, it's just an incredible gift, but it requires a lot of work. It requires to have the guts, you know, to do it. And it's easy. It's a funny thing is, you know, my sponsors say, you know, the problem with AA is they get too well too fast. The problem is without the lash of alcoholism, if you're a year sober, or 2 years sober, or 5 years sober, or 10 years sober, and you're sort of managing your life, and you got a few bucks, and you got a car, and a wife, you know, and you're going to AA meetings, why do any of this stuff? It becomes easy to just sort of like an automatic pilot, go along and not be doing it, and sort of think you're doing it, and not push yourself. And God knows, I have no idea. And I know I do it half-assed anyway. I have no idea why I do it. And the only thing I can think of, here we go back to that third step, is because no matter how screwed up I am, no matter how much I'm an alcoholic, no matter how much I want to go the opposite way, no matter how much I'm lazy, the only clue I have is no matter how screwed up I am, you know that part of the book that says we are not saints, the point is that we're willing to grow along. No matter how screwed up I am, I have that one point going for me. I want to be like him. I want to follow him. See, that's where the God thing comes in. You see, the good orderly direction thing, that's a drag. I'm an alcoholic. That's like prison to me. Somebody saying to me, you've got to be good. You know what I mean? Forever is a non-starter for me. It's like an obligation. But you put somebody in front of me that I want to follow and I want to be with and I'm in love with, and I say, why can't I be like, I want to be with it. You put a vision in front of me where there is no, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish, where I could be, I'll follow that guy to the ends of the earth. I'll follow that man, whether it be a sponsor, a mentor, or a vision, or a feeling. So you have a relationship with that God that this book's going to give you and lead you to. You'll follow that thing. You'll be doing the good order. You'll be doing all that stuff. You'll be doing the steps. You can't have that thing without doing. You'll do these steps almost automatically. You'll be hanging out with the right people. You're gonna be, you know, you ain't going to be following that God and building that relationship and want to be with him and wind up in a titty bar. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to be following that man and doing that thing and doing all that stuff and wanting to be like him and reading the books that they read and hanging out with the people and wind up in the wrong places with the wrong. It just ain't going to happen. You ain't going to be there. It ain't going to happen. I've never seen it happen. I've never seen a guy who's involved in the chase after God, who's seeking God, who's hanging out with people seeking God, who's fully focused on deal and says, I want to be like him, wind up in trouble. Because he's hanging out with the wrong people over at the El Toro Lounge. And he says, I just happen to be there. But I've seen a lot of people that are not involved in that thing and in AA get confused and wind up there. You know what I mean? It's all about him. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about number 6.